Hello and welcome to episode number 42 of Chell Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney, and as per usual, we've got a ton to talk about today. Before we get into it here, same spiel every week, but the importance is never lost. Please follow the podcast on Twitter at Chell Squared and on Facebook at Chell Squared for more hot takes, news about future guests, poll questions, and a whole lot more. Please rate the show if you enjoy listening. It means more to me than I can put into words. And every time you either like the show on SoundCloud, give it a rating on iTunes, follow it on Spotify, etc., a puppy gets a hug from its owner. I don't make the rules here, just making sure you are in the know. If you prefer listening to podcasts on YouTube, search Chell Squared Podcast, and the show is there too. The show is everywhere from iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and every other platform you enjoy listening to podcasts on. If Chell Squared isn't on your preferred platform, shoot me a tweet or a DM, and I will put it on there. I'm not sure if this is relevant or not, but I figure I put it on here just in case. Better to be safe than sorry. Though I am a SiriusXM employee, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with the company. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of SiriusXM. If you are angry at my takes, direct them to me and me alone, please and thank you. This episode is split into two parts. The first half dedicated to women's hockey. Big news a few days ago, bombshell, the CWHL announced it will cease operations on May 1st, 12 years after first establishing in 2007. We'll talk about what this means for the future of Canadian women's hockey. The NWHL, on the other hand, announced it will be expanding to Toronto and Montreal markets. Will it be the same teams from the CWHL, or will we see separate franchises altogether? The NHL pledged to give the NWHL $100,000 in order to provide better financial stability to the league. The NHL previously gave $50,000 to each of the two leagues, but the NHL has also put out multiple ads that put $100,000 on the line in their playoff bracket challenge. Nice to know a bracket challenge and the top women's hockey league in the world deserve the same amount of money. Not a good look for the NHL. What's going to happen with all these CWHL players and team personnel now that the league will soon be defunct? Is there a plan in place? Also, the Women's World Cup is underway. Who are the biggest names to look out for? And what kind of damage will they do on the ice? Also, how strong is the future of women's hockey overall? And how, if at all, should the NHL step up to help women's hockey? No poll question this week, but it will return next Thursday. We'll get into everything I just listed and a whole lot more. Joining me for the first half of the show this week is NWHL contributor Dan Rice. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So before we get into the super nitty-gritty here, question for you. In your bio, it says you've been covering the Devils since 2002, been a contributor to the NWHL since 2016. What made you want to do both? How did the opportunity arise for you to be an NWHL reporter?
I basically heard about the Riveters playing over in Brooklyn, and so if there was a player on the roster that was from New Jersey, I didn't know much about women's hockey at the time. And then I also recognized Jenny Scrivens was playing for the Riveters at the time, and her husband is Ben Scrivens, who played in the NHL for a couple of years with multiple teams. And from there, I reached out to the league. They let me come cover a couple of games. And I was really fascinated by the style of play, the passion that the players put in, and also the fact that they also have day jobs. I also have a day job, so that made it kind of intriguing, and I could relate, I guess, to their situations. And as they say, the rest is kind of history. And the next year, somebody that was working in the league front office at the time, who's no longer there, wanted to bring me on board to help write some stories for the website because they felt they were lacking some of that kind of oomph. And a couple of years later, here we are, and I'm still doing the same thing, hoping to spread the message about the league, about the players, about their unique stories and stuff like that.
So for those that haven't yet seen a women's hockey game, either on TV, I know they've done some stuff on Twitter as well, or otherwise, what is the biggest difference between the NHL versus the NWHL in terms of play style, and if there's anything else?
The one major difference that you're always going to notice is there's no checking. There is physical contact, and in some ways that kind of contradicts itself. But there is no, there will be penalties called if you check your opponent into the boards, off the puck, things like that. So that's the one main, I would say, big difference. But again, the game is far from not being physical. It's pretty physical out there, and these women play just as hard as the men do. That's for sure. As far as I'm concerned.
So I'm sure you know the few days ago bombshell, the CWHL, which is the Canadian variant of the NWHL, announced that they will be ceasing operations in May. Take me through your first thoughts, because it kind of came as a surprise to my, as far as I know of this, about the situation, it came as a surprise to practically everyone involved. Take me through what your first thoughts were and what the rest of the league thought, what the rest of the NWHL thought.
Yeah, I was as surprised as anybody. It was just supposed to be a end of the season kind of conference call with the commissioner, answer any questions about the past season, things like that. And they led off with, oh, hey, by the way, we're planning on expanding to two cities north of the border. You know, I think it's great for the NWHL. I think it's sad, on the other hand, for the CWHL that they had to suspend or cease their operations. I'm you know, torn between, is this the league that that everybody should play in? Should there be a different league from any of the two leagues that existed? I'm not sure. I know really the answer to that question, but this is the one league that we have now, and I say that everybody should put their support behind it. Having said that, I think the league is excited for the possibilities. With one of the main points, at least that I took from the conference call, was the commissioner mentioned that there were investors that were kind of torn when there was two leagues. They didn't know where to invest their money and therefore didn't invest at all. And now that there is only one league, you know, those investors, I guess we say their tune has changed and they're a little bit more eager to invest in a sport and in a league that has no competitors. As far as the players, I spoke with one or two players via text, you know, as the news was breaking shortly after, and they were excited. They're excited about the NHL throwing a little bit of monetary support behind them. They wish it would be a little bit more, and I think we all do, but at the end of the day, it's hopefully a first step to, you know, other maybe franchises buying stakes in these teams like the Buffalo Sabres owners have with the Buffalo Buttes.
So I know you mentioned it a little bit, but can you go a little bit deeper into the pros and cons of now having one league as opposed to two?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Canadian Women's Hockey League had seven teams, I believe, and five of those teams won't be around, or you know, there'll be five less teams around if the NWHL stops at just expanding two more teams. That means less jobs, but it also means higher competition, I guess, for the jobs on those teams that will still be around. And that's up on, you know, that's up to the players. There's a lot of talk, and some of the national team players have already been quoted about saying they don't know what they're going to do yet. And I think that's going to be a big determining factor as to what goes on here in the next couple of months. Do they want to play in this league? Do they have differences with people that run this league and they don't want to play in this particular league? They want a different league, perhaps. These are all questions that, you know, hopefully get answered after the World Championships and in the near future here as we approach getting ready for another women's hockey season at the end of the summer.
Do you know if the NWHL has plans to fit the players or the personnel of the CWHL? I mean, because it seemed to me on social media and a lot of the CWHL players kind of tweeted the same thing in solidarity with each other, because this whole thing came as a complete surprise to them. Does the NWHL have any sort of plan, at least to your knowledge, of giving at least some of these players, some of these personnel, jobs now in this league, now that they don't have one in the CWHL?
I think that they would like to, but I think it's I honestly don't know the answer to that. That's just a guess saying that I think that they would like to. Everything that I've heard is they want to talk with those people when the time is right. Technically, the CWHL said that they're not folding until May 1st, so we have a few weeks after World Championships to kind of figure that out. If I had a guess, I would say some would maybe come on board, but maybe not all. And I don't think it would be them absorbing the Toronto Furies and the Montreal Les Canadiens. I think it would just be two separate franchises in those cities, and you know, that's for the people behind the scenes to figure that stuff out. That's definitely not one of my areas of expertise, that's for sure.
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't expect, you know, for you to know every single like little law thing that goes on and you know, the legality behind every single detail is for the lawyers. It's definitely not for everyone else.
Not my expertise, and I just try to, you know, the main thing that I love to do is tell the stories of these players, and every now and then these issues or these kind of types of news items come along, and I try my best to present what I know about the situation, but you know, I'm not an expert in what went wrong with the CWHL and why the players don't want to maybe play in the NWHL and those kind of things. But you know, I try and do as best I can to help promote the league and you know, let people know that it exists, because sometimes that's the biggest challenge of all.
Of course. So we talked about this briefly earlier on, but the NHL now giving the NWHL $100,000 in support of this league, but it kind of came, it seems like a small number, especially because they are giving away the same amount of money in a playoff bracket challenge, and I saw a lot of people voice their displeasure over it on social media, and I wanted to get your take on that, because while obviously, right, any amount of money is good money for the NWHL, but it just seems like it wasn't the smartest decision by the NHL to make those two numbers exactly the same.
Yeah, it seems like it should be more, and I agree with what the players and people have said. Like, you know, it'd be nice if they added a couple of zeros to that number to help them out a little bit. But at the same time, it's, you know, one private business investing money in another private business, and not being a businessman, I don't know how often that occurs. I would assume probably not too often. But again, I think, you know, we just want to see these players have a place to play and not have to worry about only making enough money, which is really like a stipend, which covers your weekly expenses and those kind of things. You know, it's tough to say. Like I said earlier, I think the best solution would be if we have the individual teams purchase the NWHL teams, like we have the situation with Buffalo. And I think if we had that in 7 or 8 different cities, I think that would be the best thing possible for the league. But I don't know if we're at that point or we're going to get to that point this summer or in the coming months. Yeah, it's tough, you know, and I always say I try not to spend other people's money, because As hockey fans, as sports fans, we say, oh, well, you know, they have this player X, they should just cut him and cut their losses and bring in another player. And, you know, if I was the owner, I wouldn't want to cut a player and be paying him not to be on my team or her to be on my team. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
Right. Well, you mentioned this a little bit earlier on, and I want to dig a little deeper into this. You mentioned that on top of playing in the NWHL and before the CWHL, these players also work day jobs, and you have reported on some of these stories. Take me through how the average player balances a 40-hour work week, which I would assume is what a lot of these players do, and also practice, and also games, and also travel. How do these women balance it all?
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. You know, typically they have practices two nights a week, maybe Tuesday night, Thursday night. From with the Riveters, I know they practice 8:45 to 9:45 at night. So that means you're leaving work. If you're lucky, you might be able to go home first, but you're probably not going home first. You're going to go right to the rink, do your whatever stretching you do before you hit the ice. Once you hit the ice, you're out there for an hour. Then you have to either eat something if you didn't eat it before. If not, you're going to go home, go back to sleep, and wake up and go to work the next morning. And it's tough. And some of the players, I know that their employers are a little bit more lenient. You know, they may let them cut out 15 minutes early or half an hour early if they know they have practice that night, or they have to get on a bus to drive to Boston or wherever they have their next game. It's not an easy thing. And that's what I love, like I mentioned, you know, about them. They're so dedicated to grow in this game and to play in hockey and having fun and hopefully making it easier for the next generation. And I think for a lot of the players, that's it. You know, some of them it's, you know, they're a teacher or an engineer. And then you have some players like Colleen Murphy, who played with the Connecticut Whale last year. She lives in North Carolina. Like, she doesn't really get to practice with her teammates until Friday night. She'll fly up. Her job is very gracious and let her leave early on a Friday. So she flies up to Connecticut, meets with her team. If they have a road trip, they practice and get on the bus. If not, she stays with a teammate. And then after the game is over on Saturday or Sunday, she has to fly back home and go to work on Monday morning. And, it, you know, over the course of a couple of months in a season, it definitely takes its toll on you. And she's not the only one with situations like that. There's a few others, but that just illustrates, you know, what they go through and how passionate and dedicated they are to what they're doing right now.
It's definitely fantastic, and it sounds impossible to me. I mean, I can't even imagine how these women do it. You mentioned quickly the they want to inspire the next generation. Well, how strong is the future of women's hockey overall, in your opinion?
I think the future is great and the possibilities are endless. We see a high level of hockey being played at the collegiate level, the under-18s, the world championships, and those kind of things. I think even if a lot of the national team players didn't come back to the NWHL, there would be enough good players coming out of college that maybe still want to play hockey and, earn a little bit of cash. Nothing groundbreaking or anything like that, but you know, earn a little bit of money and set the example for the next generation that they don't have to dream about playing in the NHL like a lot of these players did, thinking they were going to be the first woman to play in the NHL. They have their own place to go now, and we saw it in Minnesota this year where they sold out 8 regular season games, 2 playoff games. In certain markets, the attention is warranted, and hopefully we have more markets like that coming here in the future.
So the Women's World Cup is now underway. I believe I saw that that Team USA beat Team Finland 6-2 today. Congratulations to Team USA on that. What are some of the biggest names to look out for in the tournament, and what kind of damage will they do out there on the ice?
On the American side, I mean, it's the usual suspects. It's Hillary Knight and Breonna Decker and Kendall Coyne Schofield. I believe they all had a goal today. I know they all definitely picked up points. Hannah Brandt is another one. You know, their biggest test is always the games with Canada, and those are always fun games. Saturday they play their preliminary round game against them, and we'll likely see them meet up again in the gold medal game. You know, as far as the other teams, they have some really good players too. Finland's goalie today, Noora Ratud, was amazing. She always is. She's been playing a long time, and she always gives Finland a chance if they could score enough goals and play enough defense. And one of the great players that some people may or may not know about is on Switzerland, Alina Mueller. Her brother plays for the New Jersey Devils, Mirko Mueller. And she's a way, way better hockey player than he is. He's obviously a defenseman, but she can put the puck in the net. And I think she had 10 points in the Olympics last year as like an 18-year-old. And she just finished her freshman season at Northeastern, and she's going to be a name for people to pay attention to in the near future.
So to the naysayers, right? So those that say, oh, you know, it's not as entertaining to watch, or it's, you know, people that are just that don't take it seriously. What would you say to those people that don't want to pay attention to women's hockey?
I'd say, you know, if you really like hockey, give it a chance. Go to a game, watch a game on TV. You know, you never know. I think if you're a hockey fan, it's hockey. It's fast paced. It's the high skill. The goalies are fantastic. I mean, in the NWHL this year, the goalies were all phenomenal. Even the goalies on the teams that finished at the bottom of the standings, they had some remarkable seasons that maybe the numbers don't show it, but they gave their team chances to take leads or win games. You know, it's just give it a chance. That'd be the biggest thing I would say. And if you like hockey, I can't see why you wouldn't like this style of hockey.
And do you think sooner rather than later, the NHL will start to see women behind the bench, head coach, assistant coach, medical staff, whatever else it could be? When, you know, give me an approximation here of when do you think the earliest you would start to see women behind NHL benches?
I would hope in the next 4 or 5 years, but that's not really something I'm haven't delved too deep into as far as thinking about. I don't see why it wouldn't be. You know, why you wouldn't want to have the best possible candidate, and if there's a woman who's a better candidate than a man to be an assistant coach, a head coach, athletic trainer, any of those things, why wouldn't you want to have the best for your team? So hopefully it's sooner than later, but these things, for whatever reason, sometimes tend to take longer than they should, and hopefully somebody is the first to break down that barrier.
Is there something that I didn't touch upon or didn't ask that you think is important to talk about or is important to bring up?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered it pretty much all. Just I would emphasize again, like I said, I think with the last question that you asked, just give the game a chance if you don't know much about it. Go out to a game. The games are usually pretty cheap. I know the NWHL games that I've been to, they're about $20. The players are pretty accessible after games. You can hang out with them, take pictures, get autographs, talk to them for a little while. They're all really, really gracious in that aspect. And I think as professional athletes, that's really cool to see because, like we talked about, they do have day jobs. They have other parts of their lives that they need to get home to, but they're more than willing to hang out for a little while longer and meet with fans and take pictures and those kind of things.
Dan, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. Plug your social media, plug where people can read your content.
Yeah, thanks again. I really appreciate you having me on. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Diablo, THW. You can find my Devils NHL and some NWHL work on thehockeywriters.com, and the NWHL content would be on the homepage of NWHL.zone. I try and do as much as I can, even during the off season, to post a couple articles a month to give you an insight into what some of these players go through and what their story is, what their background is, and things like that.
Dan, again, really, truly appreciate the time. You do amazing work. A big reason why I wanted to bring you on today, talk some women's hockey. Again, really, really, truly appreciate it. Talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on. Have a good night.
For the second half of the show, we are going all in on the NHL playoff picture, season finale a few days away. We know most teams that have made the dance, but we still don't know the last few that will make it. We also don't know what all the matchups will be. We at least do know one. The Bruins, who currently have 105 points, will play the Maple Leafs, who have 99 points in the first round of the playoffs. That is the second dumbest idea the NHL has had, which is to get away from the highest seeds playing the lowest seeds. I don't know why they ever got rid of that, but in any case, the actual dumbest idea was the trapezoid, and both are still alive and well in 2019. What a time to be alive, I guess. I don't know. The last time the Carolina Hurricanes clinched a playoff spot was April 4th, 2009. Today's April 4th, 2019, and they once again have a chance to clinch a spot to go to the dance. First wild card spot with 95 points, the Blue Jackets at 94 and the Canadiens at 94. All three teams have two games left to play. If Montreal drops a point in Washington and the Hurricanes pick up two against New Jersey tonight, they are in. Columbus plays tomorrow against the Rangers, who were absolutely embarrassed at Madison Square Garden against the Senators last night. The confirmed worst team in the league, and oh, by the way, Colorado still owns their first round pick, so nice job, Ottawa. Eugene, listen, Eugene, I know you're listening to this podcast, Eugene, it's time to let it go. It's time to let the franchise go to someone else. For the love of Ottawa and for everyone else in the NHL, it is time to let the franchise go to someone else. If the NHL playoffs started today, the Hurricanes would play Washington in round one. The Caps swept the season series, winning all four games. What can Carolina do to make sure that doesn't happen if the two teams meet? Other regular season sweeps that might meet in round one are the Lightning winning all three games against the Blue Jackets and the Flames winning all three against the Avalanche. Anything can happen in the postseason, though. Whole new ball game once game 83 starts. The Coyotes, though, are hanging on by a thread with 84 points. If Colorado picks up a single point in their last two games, Arizona will officially be the final team eliminated from the playoff hunt in the Western Conference, and that conference will finally be set. We will know who will make the playoffs in that conference. Also, we'll get to trophies more next week, but who gets the Calder? Lots of great names, but only one can win. Heated race, to say the least. All that and more on the second half of the show. Joining me once again is Syracuse University men's ice hockey defenseman and Hurricanes connoisseur is Ford Hatchett. Hatch, congrats again on bringing home the hardware in the ESCHL playoffs, and welcome back to the show.
I appreciate you having me on again. That was a fun weekend a couple weeks ago down near Philly. So three overtime games kept it pretty interesting, but it was enjoyable, and it will be just as enjoyable to finally see the Hurricanes back in the playoffs if they can get it done.
I kind of did a summary of it a couple weeks ago. If you missed it, go check that out. I mean, this was, and I texted this to you after you won. I mean, this was the most incredible weekend in the history of the sport. This will never happen again, and for you guys to pull it off, I mean, I I had no words when it happened. Well, I did. I was just yelling at the top of my lungs because I was excited you guys won. But I still have no words because that series of events will never, ever, ever happen again. And for it to happen and for it to happen to you guys was absolutely just astounding. And congratulations once again. And also the Hurricanes. Finally, after 10 years of missing the playoffs and disappointment, as you well know, are finally super, super close to making it to the promised land once again. How do you feel?
Well, it feels pretty great. I mean, just as a Hurricanes fan, and really, as we've talked about in the past, I support all, you know, I'm always obviously from Raleigh, and it's close to my heart, but I support all the small market and Sunbelt teams, just because I think hockey can thrive down there, and it's great to see. You know, as you mentioned before, it's been 10 years to the day since they last clinched a playoff spot. I remember the Anton Babchuk overtime slap shot that beat Marc-Andre Fleury and sent him back to the dance in 2009. And this morning in Raleigh, actually, the tailgate started. It's a great part of hockey in Raleigh, especially in late April and into May and June. It was great runs then, and so they've got the tailgates back out. They were back out as early as 10:30 this morning, ready for this one. And as we speak right now, things look okay. Carolina's up 2-1 in their game, and Montreal's down 2-1 in theirs, both in the second period. So at the time of this recording, things are looking okay, but a lot can still happen.
I remember when you first appeared on the show, this was early on in the season. The Hurricanes were either on top of the standings or close to it. And then you came on the show, and the Hurricanes were super bad for like the next couple of months. So hopefully yeah, that doesn't happen again.
If you jinx me again, this may be my last appearance. I want to say that.
quick question before we get into the NHL. So did you have your day with the trophy yet, or is that day coming?
Well, I have had several, let's say, unscheduled days where I've ended up winding up with the trophy. I've wound up with it. But my scheduled day is still on the horizon, so we shall see. I haven't planned it out yet, but I'll start working on the agenda pretty soon.
That was going to be my follow-up question. What are your plans with it when it will finally be your scheduled day? Where are you going to bring it? Are you going to show it off? Are you going to bring it to class? I mean, what is the tentative schedule? Because I know you just said you don't really have a schedule yet, but what is the best case scenario with you and that trophy when your day comes?
Well, it'll be a full day. I'll probably keep it up here in Syracuse while we're here, and I got to imagine I'll be taking it around at the very least to the radio station, WAER, which I know you're familiar with, and then
Syracuse guy.
It could be in store. That's true.
We are so orange. Both of us are so orange that honestly, if your phone or device isn't bleeding orange right now, then we are not doing our jobs properly.
And that's why we're a hockey podcast, and we're not going to discuss the NCAA basketball tournament.
No, we don't watch basketball, even though my job is in basketball. Anyway, beside the point.
Yeah, it wasn't our greatest showing in against Baylor this year, but that's why we got a hockey team, right?
Yeah, we're a hockey school, man.
Hockey school.
We are a hockey school.
To the women's ice hockey team as well. They took home their conference championship and earned the school's first NCAA tournament appearance.
Yes, super, super proud of them. They lost to Wisconsin in the first round of nationals, but I mean, Wisconsin was number one for a reason. That team was stacked, to say the least.
And our team kept it close. It was a good game. They battled, and like you said, that Wisconsin team is something else loaded. But still, a great season for them, a historic one, and happy that you're right. Syracuse is a hockey school.
We are definitely a hockey school. So wait, you dodged the question. What are your plans with the trophy?
That's right.
So stop dodging the question. I need the answer.
I will most likely, there will be at least one food trip. I haven't decided what type of cereal will be eaten out of it, but there will be cereal. I promise you that. There will probably be a stop at the station at WAER. If you know me well, you know that there will probably be some Mario Kart racing with the trophy.
Oh,
later in the night.
That sounds like a day and a half, and that, I wish I could be there. That sounds like an incredible, incredible day. I'm very glad I graduated in December, but with that being said, If I could ungraduate for one day and be there for that, I would absolutely be there.
We got to get you on the schedule. We'll get you. You're coming back for commencement weekend. We got to get
that
you
is true. I would love a day with that hardware. I don't even know what I would do with it because I wouldn't. Where would I go? Where would I go? It's commencement weekend. Where I can't bring it to me. I can't bring it with me on stage, right? Or can I? That's I'll have to discuss with the rest of the team that's graduating. So no promises, right? Talk to Captain Mac and Bress and all those guys and see what they say.
We'll get down to the negotiating table and figure this out.
Right. We have to get I'll get my GM phone out. We'll do some negotiation. Some draft picks will be exchanged. But I do feel like if Gretzky got traded, then I feel like this could be negotiated. That's all I'm saying.
Anything could happen, right?
Before we lose everybody here, I'm sure we lost some people talking about Syracuse for 9 hours. The NHL playoffs are right around the corner, couple of games away. I think 29 out of the 31 teams, if I counted correctly. But again, I did not study math in college, so I could be wrong. Have played 80 games. Only two have played 81, so a couple of games away from the playoffs starting. We only know one matchup set in stone right now, and that is the Bruins and the Leafs, which, as I mentioned in the opening, probably shouldn't have been a round one matchup, considering they have 105 points for the Bruins and 99 for the Maple Leafs. But
Well, and we've known that's going to be a round one matchup really since about the second week of the season almost. It feels like that's, I mean, that's been locked into stone since November, the way Tampa Bay's been playing, and Toronto and Boston have both had, as you said, very good seasons. And you know, I'll say this for the playoff format. I don't love it. I like the 1-8 better in each conference, but I don't get as riled up about it as I've seen, especially some Toronto Maple Leaf fans on Twitter and even some Toronto media members on Twitter, who I understand that Toronto has 99 points as we speak, and Boston has 105, and that seems unfair in the first round. But, you know, I can't get too upset about a team that finished third in their division having to play a good team in round one. You know, I'm okay with seeing good matchups, and you got to go through the best at some point. So, you know, I don't think it's ideal, but I'm not as bummed about it as some people seem to be.
I mean, I get what you mean, right? And obviously, I'm not a Bruins fan, nor am I a Maple Leafs fan. But it just doesn't seem like the appropriate matchup in round one. It just doesn't seem, because unless I'm wrong here, I feel the winner of that matchup plays the Lightning in round two.
That they do.
Which is dumb. That is dumb and that is ridiculous. If the Lightning and or the Bruins or the Maple Leafs were to battle, make it the conference final. I mean, there's no reason for it to be a second round matchup. That is ridiculous. At least in my opinion anyway. I mean, like, again, all this is opinion anyway, right? But it just rubs me the wrong way that two really good teams are going to knock half of them out prior to the conference final. It rubs me the wrong way.
Well, and you say that, and you look at the standings right now. It's not likely to happen, but Tampa Bay has been the best team ever to play hockey, at least since the 2004-2005 lockout.
Right. And when everyone won 82 games that year.
Right. I mean, there's still an outside chance they could draw Pittsburgh Penguins in round one. I mean, the Pens have got to at least win a game here and hope that Columbus and Carolina don't take care of their business. You know, Tampa Bay's not out of the woods and seeing a good team in round one either.
It would be quite interesting to see the Penguins play the Lightning in round one, but it seems to me that the very likely scenario is that Columbus ends up playing the Lightning, which, I mean, there's so much at stake here. If you're Columbus, right? You got Panarin, you got Bobrovsky, you got Duchesne, you have Dzingel, you have so many pieces that are hanging at the balance of what happens over the next 2 months if they make the playoffs, which I assume they will. But at saying that, right, even if they do make the playoffs and they stick to the second wild card spot, they have to play, like you said, the best team in, I mean, honestly, one of the best teams in the history of the sport, but also could be statistically the best team in the history of the sport if they win the next two games. So this team, I mean, on home ice, away, it doesn't really matter for the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is a team that, I mean, it's going to be tough to win one game from them. To win four, Columbus has so much riding on, one, making the playoffs, because if they don't, it's a massive disaster. Two, even if they do make the playoffs, they meet Tampa Bay, who they got swept by in the regular season. Like I said earlier, you know, once the playoffs start, it's a whole new ball game, and the regular season stats don't matter anymore. But at the same time, the Lightning can beat anybody. And barring a collapse, which would be the worst collapse since Duke, heyo, Syracuse still has seen more Final Fours in the last 4 years than Duke has anyway. That's just the Syracuse in me, proud of us. And Duke completely blowing a Final Four run, even though they had, I guess, the best roster in a long time. That team was stacked and they didn't make the Final Four. Disaster. Anyway.
And just like the Columbus Blue Jackets, most of their stars aren't sticking around after the year.
Yeah, they are. A lot of them are one and done. Duchesne and one and done. Maybe. We don't know. But Dzingo looking like he'll be out of there also if Duchesne leaves. Panarin's out of there, most likely. Bobrovsky's out of there, most likely. This team, I mean, if it's Columbus, Tampa Bay in the first round, I don't have a whole lot of hope for Columbus on that one.
Man, I don't have a whole lot of hope for whoever has to run into the buzzsaw that is Tampa Bay right now. But obviously, you following the Rangers as closely as you do, you've seen a lot of John Tortorella and his playoff experience.
Right.
I mean, they've got the talent on that team.
So is
That's
Tampa.
That's true. But Columbus has the talent on that team where they can compete. Can they beat Tampa Bay? I don't know. But, I mean, we've seen it so many times in the past. If Sergei Bobrovsky gets hot, all bets are off. If you have a hot goalie in the NHL playoffs, all bets are off. I mean, you remember the Jaro Halak years when he upset both Washington and Pittsburgh while playing for the Montreal Canadiens. All it takes is one goalie to get hot, and even the mighty can fall.
It's true. To see,
albeit not likely.
To see the Lightning fall would be, I mean, it would be a disaster in Tampa Bay, right? I mean, you would at least, I don't want to say this is a cover bust year for Tampa Bay, but if they don't make it at least to the final, I would think it's a disaster for that team considering how absolutely dominant they were the entire season. I mean, historically dominant. If they fall, you know,
well,
if they,
not just this year.
Yeah.
You got to think back to the pressures mounting on that core group that was a game away from the Stanley Cup final a year ago, lost in Game 7 to the eventual Cup champions, Washington. Before that, they've had some struggles. They made the Eastern Conference Finals several times, as only gotten over the hump to the Stanley Cup final the once, losing to Chicago. You know, the clock's ticking. Now, they've got a lot of good young pieces on that team who are signed to really good contracts, but they can't keep everybody forever. And so this is, I think you're right, this is going to be a disaster if they don't find a way to at least get to the finals. And, you know, even if they do, eventually they got to put it together because this team's not getting any younger and the pieces aren't going to get any cheaper.
No, they are in cap hell as it is. If they don't win now, they definitely won't get cheaper. So the Carolina Hurricanes here, 95 points, they are very, very, very close to clinching a playoff spot here. Rod Brind'Amour has done an incredible, incredible job coaching and carrying this team to the postseason. What have you seen from the man behind the bench that has either changed the way this team plays or what has Rod done that has separated himself from other coaches?
Well, to be honest with you, we talked about it at the beginning of the year when they were on a hot stretch. It was just a new voice. Bill Peters' voice had grown tired in this room. He's done an excellent job in Calgary, but it's clear he lost the room last year. And the new voice has energized the players. He's connected with guys. He's a guy who's been there before. But Rod has said in several interviews that, you know, he hasn't really changed anything. You mentioned they went through a real rough patch through November and December and were at one point just three spots out of last place in the NHL. Rod has said they haven't changed much game plan-wise or anything. The pucks have just started going in the net. They've always been playing a sound game. They always lead the league or close to the top of the league in the possession numbers. And the additions they've made, give John Waddell, and it's really GM by committee under new owner Tom Dundon, but give the GM credit. Tom Dundon and Don Waddell and Rick Dudley and the whole staff up there and Eric Tolsky, who's the analytics guru, has been a big part of this and could be in line for a promotion this summer. They've done a great job of adding pieces that have fit this group. You know, one thing about the Hurricanes in the years past, as good as they were possession-wise, they were easy to play against. And that doesn't mean going out and grabbing grinders and guys who can't play in the league but can throw their hands around and throw big bodies. They went and grabbed guys like Michael Ferland and Jordan Martineau. And these are guys that can play a heavy game and still contribute. It's kind of changed the culture. Then you talk about adding Dougie Hamilton. He's really turned a corner in the second half. You know, he had three goals, I think, in the first half of the year before January 1st. Since then, he's got 16, I believe, 15 or 16 leading all defensemen since the new year. He's just been a totally transformed player on that top pair with Jacob Slavin, who's just having another outstanding defensive year. So Rod has mentioned, you know, Rod has said it himself. They haven't changed much. They never deviated from his game plan, and they've just gotten some pucks to go their way. And I can't mention the deals that the GM has pulled off without mentioning the Nino Niederreiter for Victor Rask swap, which totally jump-started this team's scoring ability, bringing in a guy who's proven and can score 20 goals in this league with his eyes closed. He's been a perfect fit on that top line with Sebastian Aho and Justin Williams.
Can't believe that trade happened. I can't believe that trade happened. Also, by the way, can we talk about how the St. Louis Blues have five goals with 5 minutes to go in the first period against the Flyers? Can we also talk about how the Blues were dead last in the league like 3 months ago?
Well, as I mentioned that, I said Carolina was 3 points out of dead last at the turn of the right around the New Year point. The team that wasn't dead last were those St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
So the Carolina turnaround has been something, but only topped by what St. Louis has done. And they've now clinched their playoff spot, and they're in contention to win the division out in the Central.
I mean, you can't write this up crazier than it has been. I think I saw something that the 97 Senators were the only team that did the same thing, but even later than the Blues did. If I'm remembering that stat correctly, which is, I mean, that's wild. Not Minnesota wild, but wild either way. So speaking of the Blues, obviously Jordan Binghamton in the race for the Calder Trophy. Lot of people are suggesting that he shouldn't be because of the amount of games that he's played, also the fact that he's 25. But at the end of the day, if Panarin can win it, so can Binghamton, I guess. Maybe? I don't have a vote here. I don't really know. But would he be in your top three for Calder, or would you have somebody else?
Well, it's a question you have to wrestle with. The rookie class this year has been pretty phenomenal. I still think it's Elias Pettersson's to lose. I think he's been that good. And Rasmus Dahlin would be my two right now. But I think you have to give Jordan Binghamton some credit for what he's done. I mean, he has almost single-handedly put that St. Louis team on his back and carried them out of last place into a playoff spot. His age, you know, I think that question was answered when Artemi Panarin won it, like you said. And the same thing could be said for Andreas Janssen in Toronto. He's 24, but he's having an exceptional rookie year. I think he's in the running. Andrei Svechnikov here in Carolina has put up 20 goals as a rookie. But if it were my top three, I think Pettersson wins it, Rasmus Dahlin's in second, and Jordan Binghamton would be my three slot. Funny that two of those guys are going to be on non-playoff teams. But they've been very good. It's really been an impressive rookie class.
It's been phenomenal for the future of the NHL as well. I mean, it's so tough to say anybody besides Pettersson, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think that Dahlin deserves the Calder Trophy. Because here's the thing, right? I mean, I'm not taking anything away from what Pettersson has done for the Canucks. I mean, he has been an absolute dynamite player for that team. 65 points in 69 games, nice, this season. I mean, but Dahlin, right? 41 points in 80 games, only 8 goals. You look at that at face value and you think, oh, well, clearly Pettersson deserves what, you know, one thing, right? The Calder isn't awarded to who scores the most, right? It is awarded to the best rookie of that season. And Rasmus Dahlin has been, bar none and then some, the best defenseman in Buffalo, which isn't a very high bar to climb over. But, you know, looking at what he's done for that city in 80 games, it's been absolutely incredible to watch him. And also his analytics are incredible. I mean, this guy is going to be a superstar if he isn't one already. And I don't want to take anything away from Elias Pettersson because he is also going to be a superstar. But I have to say that Dahlin, I would give him the Calder. Pettersson would be the two here. And this might be a hot take. This might not be a hot take. But I would give Miro Heiskanen the third vote for the Calder.
Well, and that's the guy I didn't even mention, but he has been just something else and really stabilized that back end in Dallas. As far as the Dahlin comment, I got no real argument for me. Both those guys, Pettersson and Dahlin, are going to be absolutely sensational players. I guess I'm almost going just on a wow factor that there hasn't been someone I'd stay up and watch Vancouver Canucks game for in a long time. And every time Pettersson was healthy enough to play, he put on a show. And he's an exciting player to watch. I don't think you can go wrong picking either one of them for the Calder. And I understand why you have Dahlin as one. I just tend to lean with Pettersson a little more. Maybe just strictly because I'm so excited watching him play.
So now that you said that, I have a serious question for you. You are staying up late to watch the Vancouver Canucks, which, I mean, I'm at a complete loss for words here, because the team is bad, except for Pettersson. So you mean to tell me that you are watching a non-playoff team during school nights, might I add, during school nights, to watch Elias Pettersson sometimes? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's accurate. I'll tell you what, there aren't a lot of guys, there are a lot of stars in the league, there aren't a lot of guys that when they're playing I want to watch. And Pettersson's turned into one of those guys. He's just so skilled and has such a creativity about his game that it's fun to watch. I mean, they're not extraordinarily similar players, but Patrick Kane is another way, you know. Is a similar guy in that facet where you want to watch him when he's on. You know, when he's on the ice, you're going to keep your eye on him because something's that liable to happen. They're just creative players, and they come around every so often. They aren't. I mean, there are some absolutely sensational players, but not guys that can really excite a fan base. And I think Vancouver's really enjoyed them, and I think the rest of the league, if you were playing in maybe a East Coast market, would enjoy him even more. But that guy is a superstar. And he's a force to be reckoned with almost every shift.
Obviously, you're choosing Carolina as your team of the East. What would be your team of the West?
As far as who's coming out of the West to play in the Cup Final?
That
or who I'm bandwagoning with.
How about give me an answer for both? Give me an answer for who you think the realistic choice would be and who you would want to win the West.
Well, I'll say this. You know, I have... bandwagoned with Nashville very hard as the Hurricanes have gone now almost a decade without a playoff appearance, as they are probably the closest to Raleigh, and they have a fun Sun Belt atmosphere and former Hurricanes Stanley Cup champion coach Peter Laviolette. I don't think anybody in that central, at least Winnipeg and Nashville, I've not been impressed with. They have sputtered down the stretch here and really let St. Louis back in it. So I don't think the central is where I'd be going. I think, you know, if I'm cheering for a team, I do still have a soft spot in my heart for Nashville, but I think I'd probably pick a team like Dallas. I like their game. I really like Jim Montgomery as a coach. He's been willing to change his game. You know, they've become a lot more defensive since he showed up. They thought they'd be able to win games in 4-3, 6-5, things like that. They haven't. He's tightened things up. He's been willing to change, and that's helped them. I know they're in the wild card spot, and right now looks like they draw someone in the Central. If I'm picking a team out of the Central, it's Dallas. But I think the more likely possibility is that one of those teams out of Pacific is going to win. Calgary's had a sensational season. As I mentioned, Bill Peters has come in there and been the perfect guy to fix that system. Do they get out of the Pacific? I don't know. I don't know if I can trust Mike Smith and David Rittich that much. That San Jose-Vegas first-round matchup figures to be just a physical bloodbath. And I'll tell you what, I think if I were a betting man, I think one of those teams is coming out of the West once again. And it's almost a coin flip, but I'd take San Jose if it started today. In the East, obviously, as you mentioned, Carolina is going to be my favorite if they can squeak in here, which they're a period away from doing so right now. But obviously, you can't pick against Tampa Bay right now. They're just so loaded, top to bottom. They're built for now. I don't see Washington having another long playoff run. That takes such a toll on your body. Pittsburgh's heating up a little bit, enough to get the job done. I don't know. They're still kind of struggling with injuries a little bit. Guinea Malkin's not fully healthy. Chris Letang's still playing through some things. And do you trust Matt Murray to stay healthy for another playoff run? Boston and Toronto are going to beat each other
fat
up.
Fat no on that one.
No, exactly. And do you trust the backup situation in Pittsburgh right now? I don't think
Absolutely not.
So I think, again, I think Tampa Bay's got to be the favorite, and why wouldn't they be? They've been so sensational and dominant. And I think if anybody's going to give them a run for their money, it's the Boston Bruins. That's a team that is built to win, as you said, led by Zdeno Chara still, who's still getting it done, signed an extension the other day. I heard you talk about that, but he's still getting it done, teaching. They've got those young guys, and obviously that top line up front, and they've tormented Toronto over the years. So we'll see. I like Tampa out of, though. I mean, how could you not? Although I will say, and this is definitely going to be a homer take, and you may see this. I may be writing about it for Canes Country this week on SB Nation, but if the Hurricanes do draw the Tampa Bay Lightning, there are a few things I like about the matchup for the Canes where I don't think they could beat Tampa Bay, but they can make it more of a series than people might expect. They play a style that is better built to maybe stifle and slow down Tampa a little bit more than maybe a Columbus is or a Toronto is. But I think right now Tampa Bay's got to be the clear-cut favorite out East.
Make a great case. I mean, I can't really argue it, at least for the East team. I mean, Tampa Bay looks to me like the clear-cut favorite. I mean, their goal differential is plus 98. 98!
Can you imagine if they get the triple digits?
I mean, this is NHL 19 numbers. I mean, you look at everybody else, right? The closest in the Eastern Conference is Boston with plus 44. Tampa Bay, more than double that. Their goal differential right now is plus 98. Calgary, the second highest at plus 64. I mean, this is not even... And they employ Mike Smith. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I mean, you can't bet against Tampa Bay. But the one thing that I will add really quickly, because I know you have to go, for the Western Conference, I don't know how you could root time and time again for Nashville, even though they do have Islanders legend Peter Laviolette, mind you, Islanders legend behind the bench. Pecorine, I've said this, I feel like I say this like every single week at this point on the show. Pecorine, when it comes to the playoffs, can't do anything to help his team win. In the Pittsburgh series, at home, he was fantastic. As soon as he got away from Nashville, he was horrid. And that led to the eventual loss to the Penguins in that series. And you saw it in Winnipeg last year. He got pulled three times in that series. You're a starting goaltender. You're supposed to be an elite goaltender, and you're getting pulled three times in a series?
No, I will say this. Can't disagree with you there. The one thing I will say, UC Saros has had a terrific year behind him. They've ridden him a lot more and called on him a lot more than they have in the past. I wouldn't be surprised that if Pecorine has a really short leash in this playoff series, because if things get in trouble, I think you're right. I think everybody's seen the horror stories with Pecorine before, and I think they'd be quick to turn to UC Saros if need be.
What at least Nashville would hope, right? At least Nashville would hope. I mean, my team of the West is the Winnipeg Jets, but I mean, I was a lot more confident in them last year than I am this year. They've been very up and down, especially recently, they acquired Kevin Hayes, a Rangers legend, and he's been good for them, but he hasn't patched all of their holes. Now, Kevin Cheveldayoff made 6 trades on trade deadline day, and still the Jets are 5-5 in their past 10 games. They've been up and down all season, and if they don't get it together very soon, they're going to be out of it before they get in it, and that's scary, especially considering you look at their lineup and you think, oh boy, this is going to be a dominant team. Not only are they not as dominant as you would expect them to be, they might not win the Central. They're tied mm-hmm. with Nashville right now with 96 points. St. Louis, one behind with 95. I mean, this is a tight race in the Central Division. A race that should have been won by Winnipeg a long time ago, and this might be a far-fetched comparison here, but this could be a tortoise in the hair situation where, you know, Winnipeg thought that they can just win the division without giving it much thought because of how good they are on paper, and yet it doesn't look like they are in the lead. They are neck and neck with the Tortoise right now, and it is a tight race with 2 games left to play. Even if they do win the Central, I mean, they haven't been as good as they have been, and it's scary if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan. Also, one quick thing, I know you have to go. One super quick thing here before I let you go. One surprise team that I might think could do a lot of damage in the playoffs: Colorado Avalanche. And let me tell you why. 7-1-2 in their past 10 games. They were almost completely out of it super recently, and then they went on this tear, just demolishing pretty much anything in their path to climb their way not only to a playoff spot, but now they're 1 point away from clinching a spot. And all of their players are hot right now. Bobrovsky's playing well. You have all of their big guys playing well. I wouldn't be surprised if Landeskog and MacKinnon and Rantanen and Barry would all score a lot in the first round or in the first 2 rounds to carry them to the Western Conference Final or beyond because of how stacked their top line is, their defense is, until you get to the bottom pairing, which, I mean, isn't that great. And if Varlamov can play as well as we know he can, that's going to be a scary team to play.
Especially given, as you mentioned, the goaltending. You have Semyon Varlamov, and if he falters, just like in Nashville, they'll be quick to go to Philip Grubauer.
Right.
He's proven he can do it.
Absolutely. Hatch, you have been absolutely incredible. Let me know the next time you want to come on. You are welcome anytime, any day of the week, even though I only record on Thursdays. You are welcome any day of the week. Plug your social media, plug your content, because now you are a writer for SB Nation. Congratulations on that.
I appreciate it. Plug all
of your stuff.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Ford Hatchet, 2 T's at the end of Hatchet. As you said, same Instagram. I think I'm at Ford Hatch. Canes Country, I'm writing a systems analyst column. It'll be coming out actually tomorrow on Friday. I'll be writing, and I've got a couple things lined up. We'll see. The Hurricanes clinch tonight. It will change the plans just a little bit for what that column will look like. But either way, it'll be coming out sometime tomorrow afternoon. And I appreciate you having me on, as always. But I will caveat my next appearance. Like you said, you jinxed us a little bit last time I came on. So if the Hurricanes don't hold on tonight, you may not hear from me for a while. And I'll hold you personally responsible.
Right. Of course. I mean, I am the what is it? Not the, am I the marionette or am I the – no, I'm the puppet master, right, in that situation?
Again, I don't know enough. This is why we studied what we did in school.
That's true. We are the reporters, not the ones that are doing the puppeteering. You are absolutely we report on the puppeteering. We don't do it ourselves. You are absolutely right. Hatch, again, super thankful you took the time out. I mean, this is a school day after all, Thursday night. So I appreciate you taking the time, and I'll talk to you again real soon.
I appreciate it. Good talking to you always.
Absolutely. And this has been episode number 42 of Chell Squared. Number 43 coming up next week. I'll talk to you then.